We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Yeah, and I'm guessing here, because like I said, I haven't been to a full-on ghost event. So, but I imagine, to contrast it to the UFO thing, like, I feel like probably I've been to plenty of UFO ones, and those are always very, like, kind of like what you said. They're very sort of honed in on specific cases. And each case has kind of got its own, like, unique thing. And I guess now that I'm sort of, like, fleshing this out loud, it's like maybe that is the case with the haunting, with a ghost event. But it's like the hauntings are all kind of like the same in a way, you know. It's like, okay, well, this house was haunted, and here's a creepy thing that we picked up. And then it's like, well, here's another thing it's almost like people are recounting their own experiences and sort of sharing that information. Whereas on the UFO side, it's like sort of like someone retroactively recounting something that happened that they weren't even there, you know. They weren't there at Pascagoula. They're just presenting an insight into the Pascagoula abduction case. You know, here's a report on this event that happened in 83 or whatever, 73. Whereas somebody else at a ghost event would go up there and be like, yeah, I went to this house last year and here's the stuff that happened. You know, so it's a very different sort of perspective from the presenters, I think. Like I said, I haven't been to – maybe they do present classic haunting cases, some of them. So, I mean, there's probably – definitely got to be some variety, but it's kind of what I imagine maybe might be part of the difference.
Well, it also goes to, you know, when you're, you know, quote-unquote ghost hunting, it's easier to kind of get evidence from haunted locations as opposed to, you know, if you're looking for the UFO stuff, that's a lot harder to find, you know, and again, let alone evidence of it. You know, it's very interesting. You know, the investigative process is quite different from one to the other. And maybe that's why it kind of differs. I don't know, but it's certainly interesting that the audience that attends these events, for sure. It's certainly different.
Yeah. There's a youthfulness to, and I noticed it at the Lauren Coleman's crypto zoology conference too. There's a certain youthfulness you don't necessarily see at the UFO events as much. You know, whether that's because people sort of have gravitated more online in UFO world or what, I'm not sure. But it's the UFO field and phenomenon is very old school, despite how popular it seems nowadays. It's still got this sort of very old schoolish vibe to it, you know. I mean, look at the show that was, like, so popular last year, the drama. It was like Blue Book. It's, like, very romanticized. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like a 1960s ish thing in a way, you know. For as much as there's all this modern stuff happening, it seems like it has a very like retro feel to it that you don't necessarily see with like Bigfoot and cryptozoology and ghosts and stuff. So that might be that might sort of have a hand in how people perceive the different fields and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the big things, he talked about this at Fort Fest, it's like a big chunk of the book, the Men in Black phenomenon. It's kind of like, I don't want to necessarily pin you as like as your forte, but this is sort of like one of the big pillars of what you've delved into over time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what really fascinated me is the fact that not many people are familiar with it. So, you know, that I think that's why I've kind of, you know, people think of me and they're beginning to think, you know, or link the two together, you know, my research and this Men in Black stuff. I mean, if you think about it, like, you know, the only other person really writing about this stuff is Nick Redfern, you know. He's looking into this. That's really it. So, and what I've started to notice is, you know, there's the stereotypical Men in Black that, you know, is made popular with the movies and all that, you know, the typical black outfit and the sunglasses and whatnot. But there are widely different descriptions of the same thing. It's almost like the Men in Black phenomenon is taking on all these different forms. And people are tending to overlook it because it doesn't fit that stereotypical definition of an MIB. That's what I've started to hone in on, And that is really surprising me how frequent this is happening, not just with UFO reports, but paranormal reports as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you call them non-human entities. It's almost like we almost need to – it's like almost like the Chupacabra thing where it's like the name has stuck now and you can't get out from under the name in a way. So it's like people think of Men in Black and they only think of the movie and the Albert Bender original sort of description of the Men in Black. But it's like it seems – whatever this phenomenon is, it seems to have morphed into, as I said, what you describe in the book is sort of – non-human entities. They're not necessarily even your classic guys in suits and the black car. It's just sort of like unsettling, eerie, humanoid, you know, human-like people, but there's something just off about them, and then something really weird will happen where, like, they'll vanish and, you know, you'll look away and they turn back and they're gone. It's like, okay, wait a minute, you know, what was that all about sort of thing?
Yeah.
You know, and I also wonder if the black-eyed kids are a part of that phenomenon too.
Yeah, you know, I don't have any case reports that I've investigated personally or talked with anybody personally about the Black Eyed Kids. You know, I don't know if it's just an anecdotal thing out there, but, you know, with some of these MIB reports, you actually do have some evidence, not a lot, but some evidence to go off of. And you have multiple witnesses too. And people who are willing to go on the record. So, it's interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk about the case, the one that got caught on video, because that's the one people can find that, like, on YouTube, I'm sure. You know, we'll put a link into it on the Coast website. We'll put we'll put a link into it on the Banal of America website where people can check that out. But talk about this video, because it's, you know, as you say in the book, it seems to be the only case of one of these Men in Black being caught on video surveillance. So it's pretty remarkable. So I guess talk about that case. I know you alluded to Shane Sobar earlier. So he's the one that's connected to this to this case, right?
Correct. Yeah, and it's funny you should mention Coast, because Coast originally, you know, put that video out there back in 2009, I think, and it kind of like spread from there. So I don't know if you were working at Coast at that time, but thanks a lot. but it was interesting because you know, people, you know, they hone in on that video surveillance of these two stereotypical MIB that enter this hotel lobby out in Niagara Falls on the Canadian side, and they're searching for the hotel's manager at that time. But he wasn't working. That's the video that you can find online. But, you know, what I like about this case, though, is we have presumably a close encounter with an MIB with multiple witnesses. The whole thing's caught on camera, which is super rare, which you brought up before when it comes to this. There's only, like, two other photographs out there that I would consider more legit in terms of so-called evidence. But, again, what makes the evidence legit is you have names, you have backstories, you have dates and times. Unlike most of YouTube and Reddit, plethora of bogus stuff, which you can't verify or disprove. So I always caution people, don't believe everything you see out there, or on the internet for that matter. But what's fascinating about that encounter is that was the trail end of Shane's experiences. That wasn't the beginning. It didn't really have a primary UFO focus. Yes, he did have two UFO sightings. They're like these black triangles in 2008. I think it was October and November 2008. But then the Men in Black show up May of 2009, the following year. So that was almost like, you know, that was several months later. Now, what happened in between that time? Shane had, well, you know, for what it's worth, he was outside of his lawn one day, and he was just cleaning the gutters, you know, cleaning the leaves out of the gutters, and this man comes down the street, and he looks up at him, and he's just staring at him, and he's just smiling at him, and Shane's like, can I help you? And the man's like, yeah, I built this house, and Shane's like, oh, okay, you're the original owner, all right, great. So he comes down off the ladder. The man's just like, he's so pleased with the house. He's like, yeah, I built this house. But Shane gives him a tour, just an outside tour. And the man goes like, yeah, you see those hills, you know, those hills, like my daughters used to roll down those hills. And he's like, those trees, they're so big now. And Shane's like, okay, yeah, great, right?
yeah.
And it is a little weird. So, but then out of the blue, this gentleman goes, okay, I got to go now. I'll see you next year. And then he just shuffles down the street. And the way Shane described it to me, it didn't even seem like his feet were even touching the ground. Okay, whatever. Could have just been just a funny old man.
Now,
Shane's
let me stop
outside,
you just for a moment, because I had a question when I was reading the book. So did he said, I would see you next year. Was that an allusion to the Men in Black incident, or was that just, did he ever come back? Because it never kind of, from what I could gather, it never got followed up on. Like, there wasn't something that happened a year later, or was that Men in Black thing a year later to when he visited?
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, was it connected in some way? Maybe this gentleman that Shane saw was an MIB. But here's where it gets weird, is he's talking with his neighbor, and his neighbor he's describing this gentleman to his neighbor who had lived on the block for like her whole life. And the neighbor is just dumbfounded. She's like, that's impossible. Like, that man died several years ago. You know, it was like 15 years ago he died. It's impossible. So here we have a potential ghost that Shane saw.
Right.
But why did he say, I'll see you next year? Did this man have some connection to MIB? Again, that's why we need to look at this and realize that all of this is connected. After that event, I found this out later, you know, talking with his wife, that his wife talked to a totally different person in the neighborhood. And that neighbor said the same thing. What, are you kidding me? That guy died. So then they had all of this paranormal stuff happen in the house. Weird disembodied voices, things moving about on their own, phantom footsteps, items would go missing, and then they would just reappear somewhere else. Really bizarre stuff. He had some weird phone issues he was dealing with. Again, these are signs of a classic haunting. Now, all that's, presumably done, but it really bothered them. They were going to sell the house. They were terrified of this. What did it mean? Was it a trail end, of the UFO that he witnessed? I don't know, maybe. Then Shane decides to take a day off from work. That's when these MIB come in. Now, in a lot of these case reports, people say that the MIB can read minds, right?
Right.
They can also, anticipate where you're going to be or you're not going to be. Well, these guys aren't too bright, because if they came in there looking for Shane and he's not working there, why are they coming in there?
Maybe, yeah, that was really weird. That struck me as very strange too. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe the whole point was not to go to Shane. Maybe it was to affect the other people. Maybe it was to be seen on camera. I don't know. There's all these questions again. We have to look beyond the obvious and consider all these other possibilities. Possibly there's something to this. I don't know. But very fascinating. They caught it on tape, but they never catch these guys leaving the hotel. They just catch them coming in, never leaving.
Right. Yeah, it's very weird. The whole thing is very weird, too, because, like, what makes it interesting in a sense, too, and this is not to disparage what Shane saw or anything, but it's like, we're not talking about some, he didn't have, like, some out-of-this-world, no pun intended, UFO sighting. It's not like, he didn't see, like, a fucking alien or anything. He didn't, he didn't take a fantastically clear picture of the object that maybe it was a government, a secret weapon or a secret craft that he wasn't supposed to have photographed. And so now we got to go and get on this guy's case and get the information and get it out of his hands. Cause I've heard of stories like that where, I don't think it's included in the book, but there's an old story and I don't remember the details of it. I'm terrible at these sort of things, but like someone came and took, you know, was like, I'm with either the government or the UFO organization, and, you know, can you give me your stuff, and we're going to process it and study it, and, you know, we'll get back to you. And then, you know, the guy followed up later, and it was like, this person never existed. So whoever it was just took his stuff and left, took the photos that were really good or took the material or whatever. So I guess continue to the point I'm making about the Shane story, that's what's so baffling about the case in a sense, too, because it was just your average UFO sighting. It makes you wonder why that would pique the interest of whatever these forces are, for lack of a better term. It's very interesting.
Exactly. These things happen so randomly. It's like there are a lot more impressive UFO sightings that do not have MIB, you know, factors at play. Yet, why this one? You know, yeah, you're right. His sighting was certainly fascinating, but it wasn't like a, you know, write home about it. It was, and it also happened to be that in this area at that time, there were other Black Triangle sightings. So, you know, what made his unique? You know, what made his experience unique? Was there something that strange gentleman who showed up on his property, you know, brought to this? Or did it, was there something involved with Shane's, you know, his history even before these things took place? You know, remember I mentioned to you how when you talk with somebody, they're not going to tell you everything, but the more you get to know them, they'll share more things with you. It so happens that, you know, Shane had some other interesting experiences. I wouldn't consider him an abductee, but he remembers, you know, one instance of possible missing time and a second involving seeing small people in his bedroom when he was younger. He shared one encounter with me, I think it was in the seventh grade, which would have been sometime in the early 1980s. He and his friend both decided to take a shortcut through the forest in order to visit. There was like this new corner store that had just opened up, but you know, Shane had to be, he had to be back in time for dinner. So he remembers taking this shortcut, right? But all he remembers is the sun was setting. His friend noticed this glowing orb coming at them through the trees. The sight was terrifying for whatever reason. Both boys took off running. But the only thing beyond that Shane remembers is opening up his front door to the house and his mother asking where the hell he had been. You know, he was confused. Yeah. He's like, I just gone to the corner store. And, you know, his mother was telling him, yeah, we already had dinner an hour ago without you. So how did that happen? You know, then a second incident he recalls when he was, I think, 18, and he saw, you know, he had just moved into a new house. He woke up in the middle of the night, sensing a presence, and he sees these small people in the bedroom, but he's unable to move or scream. Now, could have just been sleep paralysis? You know, possibly. But, you know, his children had strange experiences too. Could it just be something about that region of Canada? You know, his neighbors have reported some very interesting stuff. Again, there's so much more to this case and so much to unpack from it that if we're just focused on the MIB experience, that's all we're going to see and we're going to miss the bigger picture. So when the case was originally examined, it was examined by Marsha Barnhart from API, the Aerial Phenomena Investigations team. Excellent team. And they looked into the MIB angle. They looked into the black triangles that he saw. They didn't really get into all this other paranormal stuff. You know, that's where I focused, you know, my research on. And it's really fascinating. And just one of many.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We do a lot. Feel free to speculate here. We do a lot of speculating on the show. Like, have you sort of like entertained any notions of what these non-human beings might be? Because it's very, you know, the original idea was like, oh, they're secret government agents. But it's like, I think we can kind of, with the exception of a handful of cases, probably, and more than likely, like back in the day, as we were saying, sort of that retro feel, like. You know, it seems more – that scenario seems more tenable in the 50s and 60s sort of idea, that where it's like nowadays it's hard to believe in a sense. You know, so I guess what do you, because they're getting weirder, too. They seem to get weirder and weirder and less sort of like, oh, this person just wants to scare me into not talking about UFOs. Because it's like, back then it was easier to scare, I think it was easier to scare people into not talking about UFOs than it is now. Because UFOs are like everywhere. So there's less stigma attached to it. But to circle back around to the question, have you entertained any sort of idea of what these things are? Or maybe just like what their purpose might be?
Yeah. No, it's a great question, and it's something that I ask myself all the time, you know, when I'm doing these cases. I'll leave you with this. This was back in 2018. I was doing a presentation on the Men in Black, a longer version of the one that you saw at Forkfest. And it was in Bordentown, New Jersey. So I kicked off the whole month of October. The organizers, Marty and Marcia, they designated a particular week for a different speaker. And it was, I think it was like every Tuesday, right, for the month of October. I was the first week talking about MIB. Then the following week was Bruce Tango, father of Dave Tango from the Ghost Hunter shows. And then the third week was Rosalyn and Michael Lewis. And Michael Lewis, I wrote about in the book, he had direct encounters with these non-human entities. He didn't refer to them as MIB. He referred to them as Beastie Boys, right? That was his little moniker for them, his little code word whenever they were around.
Yeah.
Now, he was speaking there, and the two event organizers, Marty and Marcia, they're on the street corner, and they're having a smoke break. And they see coming from the direction of the pharmacy there, there's this gentleman coming across the street. And he looks weird. You know, he's got this long coat. He's got, you know, I believe a hat, dark sunglasses. He looks kind of like a stereotypical MIB, but he's wearing jeans. And he comes across the street. They notice him. They look at each other like, oh, that's a little weird. They look back. He had already crossed the street. He traveled this great distance in a seemingly a split second. He's now right next to them. They look at each other like, that was weird. They look back. Now he's all the way down the street from the venue on the other street. And they look at each other again. They're like, where's Justin? We got to talk to him about this. Now this strange man is back at the corner of the street. Walking by the venue, he pops his head in, almost like he's looking for somebody, and pops his head out. And at that point, they get a clear description or a clear visual of this guy. This guy's, you know, very pale. He fits the classic mold of these non-human entities. And then he's now down the other street. What was the point of that? If he was there for me, well, again, not too bright. He's 2 weeks too late. Was he there for Michael, who had these experiences before? Maybe. I talked to Michael about it, and Michael brought up an interesting point. He theorizes that maybe these guys just have to be in the vicinity of certain people, kind of like an information, like extraction in a way, but like they're picking up on something, right? Kind of like a radar in a way. Like they're gathering all this info. And then they're gone. I don't know how accurate that is. Again, just more speculation. But, you know, some of the cases are like that. Some of the cases are information suppression, like you mentioned earlier.
What
do these guys want? What's the point? Is it just to scare people? And maybe. Or maybe there's something else that we haven't quite identified yet.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's like you want to, like... You want to, like, you know, you joked about before, it's like, oh, I want to be abducted. It's like, part of me is like, I want to encounter one of these beings to see what you discern from the experience. But then, as you sort of allude to in the book many times, you mentioned sort of in the book, it's like, these events happen, and, like, no matter how you think you're going to react in the talking like you and I are right now, it's like, when it actually happens, either through the force of whatever the anomalous phenomenon is, or through your own human nature, you never react the way you think you would. So it's like, I may encounter one of these men in black and be like, I'm going to get out of here. I'm freaking out. even though right now I'm like, oh, I'd like to talk to one of these entities to see if I could gather any sort of insight, you know.
That's
right. It's a conundrum.
Yep, like that was a perfect example. Like a lot of people say, oh, this is how I'm going to respond. This is how I'm going to react. You know, there's a gentleman who had a strange encounter with this sniffing man. He was doing a historical case, a historical UFO encounter, at the Stonehenge Apartments in northern New Jersey, right? And he was just retracing the steps that these close encounters happened. And as he's sitting in the park, this man shuffles up to him, starts sniffing him like a bloodhound. And this guy is a trained paranormal investigator. He knows how to respond to extreme situations. He's been trained by the best. He knows what he's doing. And how did he respond to this guy? He was dumbfounded. He was just basically like still. He let this guy smell him, and then the guy takes off. And he didn't even pursue after him. He didn't even, like, he was just kind of like, what just happened? What I've noticed with the phenomenon is it tends to affect people on levels that that changes how they would normally behave or react under any other normal circumstances. Like with Rhea Baker, the med student, right? Why did respond why did she respond in that way? People do the same thing with MIB. You know, in some of these classic cases with MIB, like Dr. Herbert Hopkins, right? He opened up the door and let the guy in. Like, he doesn't know this man. He wouldn't have done this. I remember, I think he had said that in his original interview. You know, why did I open up the door and let this guy come in? You know, this guy phoned him saying, hey, I'd like to meet with you. And as soon as he hung up, there he is on his doorstep. So strange, right? People act out of character. And that could also explain why we don't have evidence, why we don't have hard, solid evidence in all of these cases, especially with UFOs. Maybe they're manipulating us in a sense that we're not even aware of. So that's
it's scary, and it certainly seems like that's kind of the case, that they're even if they're just so unnerving that it puts you off your own game, in a sense, you know. It's something very perplexing about the whole thing. Now, talk a little bit about phantom photographers. Just like I said before, it's like people think about the classic MIBs, but there's all this milieu of characters, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I was just looking through the Normal Paranormal earlier today, and you mentioned, you know, Tim Renner's done a lot of good stuff on these, like, I don't know what, like Shadow Lumberjacks or something. So, like, there's all kinds of interesting, and when we get Tim eventually on the show, we'll talk about that. But like I said, there's all kinds of interesting characters. And one of the characters you mentioned in the book are these phantom photographers, which is a phenomenon that I had never heard before. So talk about this. Enlighten the Banal America listeners to the phantom photographers phenomenon.
Yeah, so these are, again, another aspect, I think, of these MIB, if you want to call them that, or these non-human entities. You know, in the 1960s, there are these anomalous events taking place with so-called phantom photographers, and they echoed the MIB experience. But these curious individuals would happen to show up out of nowhere, photograph UFO witnesses and even researchers, and then vanish, right? Just gone. So I had the pleasure of interviewing Beth Wareham, who is Nick Redfern's editor. And she explained to me, while working on one of his books, she'd experienced this, where she was working on a book, and then these MIB would just show up. You know, apparently Nick Redfern's other editor had experiences too, but she wouldn't talk to me about it. She wouldn't go on the record. I don't know why. But one of these men was outside of Beth's brownstone in New York City. And she said he didn't look out of place, but he had like a sort of large setup camera. And it wasn't one of those like old-fashioned cameras with a giant flashbulb, but to her it still looked like a rather large rig, especially in our, you know, digital era, slim this and, you know, nano pocket cameras here. But in all the time
pocket phones, cell phone cameras and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah. In all the time that she lived there, she had never seen a person so fascinated with taking pictures of her brownstone like this man was. And then, you know, at some point, Beth was just like fed up with it, and she yelled at him, and the man took off down the street and in what she described as a goofy, jerky with his legs. I find that description very fascinating because in the other reports of MIB encounters or NHE, non-human entities, whatever you want to call them, strange people, they move the same way. This odd mechanical clunky movement style. You know, there was another lady, Geraldine Robinson. She told me about her experience on the AC boardwalk in July of 1974. She was there with her kids. You know, her daughter Lisa, who was 12, and Tina, who was 4. And she described this man who suddenly came out of nowhere and started taking photographs of them. But, you know, and this is on the AC boardwalk in the middle of July. It was a hot day. Everybody's wearing like, you know, swimsuits or shorts or whatever. This guy shows up completely in all dark clothes, long pants, long sleeve shirt, blazer. And she remembers that distinctly. She was like, that was strange. He's taking photos of her. She yelled at him, the hell are you doing? And then all of a sudden she turns around, she turns back, and he's gone. And she's like, where the hell did he go? Like, you couldn't have lost sight of somebody like that. And sure enough, this is what happens with these phantom photographers. When you encounter them, they'll just take off. They just show up snapping photos. But why? What's the point? Another guy I interviewed in the book, Dan Doty, he had a plethora of strange experiences involving, you know, close encounters with Bigfoot multiple times. He's had UFO experiences. He's had weird premonitions. Well, there was one incident in 1997 where I think he was coming off of his shift of working overnight, and he sees this helicopter 30 feet off the ground, you know, just hovering there. And inside the helicopter is this man with this mustache and dark hair, and he's pointing this large camera at him on this vacant lot across from his property when he gets home from work. Now, Dan doesn't remember any sounds with the helicopter's entrance or exit. It's just there. You know, a lot of these phantom helicopter sightings, I think, are very similar to the phantom photographers. People don't see these things coming in. They'll just show up. It's almost like an extension of the weird experiences. And it seems to be taking on this form. What is the MO? I don't know. Is it like some sort of surveillance, some sort of data collection? Yeah, we can get all conspiratorial, but there's not enough evidence to conclusively say this is why this has happened. It just happens. Very strange. So
yeah, it's almost shit. And you also, you know, we speculate, okay, surveillance, but then it's also you can also turn it on its head and be like, well, what if this is, like you said, maybe it's an extension of the phenomenon where it's like, whatever this thing is, it's like, let's see how this guy reacts if we show up and start taking pictures, or let's see how people react to that. You know what I mean? It's like, maybe it's that kind of thing. Who knows? It's very, very weird. And you made a point just now, and it's in the book too. It's like, I thought it was really interesting because I hadn't really dug too deeply into the Men in Black thing. And these non-human entities. What you point out in the book is that very often when you, like what happened with Nick Redfern's editor, when you confront them, then they, as scary as they seem, they back down right away and take off or get out of there or anything like that. They just, they bail on the scene right away. So it's like, so as scary as they seem, they're actually kind of not, more scared of us than we are of them kind of thing, like a wild animal or something.
That's right. And, you know, John Keel writes about this when he used to, you know, go after these guys. You know, he would receive calls that they're in the vicinity. He'd rush over. They're gone. He would miss them by mere minutes. Timothy Green Beckley, right? He's a pioneer and UFO researcher and investigator. He went out with James Mosley back in the late 1960s. There was a, and it's one of the photos that I have on my site where, you know, there was a UFO researcher named Jack Robertson, and he was in the one building, and his wife, Mary, kept seeing this guy just standing there watching people go in and out of the building. And she got really nervous about it because he was there every single day. Now, Jack Robinson was, or Robertson was a very prominent UFO investigator back then, and especially in that area. So Mary phones Tim and Jim and is telling them about this, and they decide to take a trip over there to kind of confront this guy. They didn't tell Mary, they didn't tell Jack about it, they just drove over there. And sure enough, they see him, they see this guy in the doorway, just standing there. Timothy snaps a photo, and then they circle around the block looking for a place to park. They do, and then they run back to the spot where this man was. He's gone, and he never shows up from that day forward. It was like they went after him, and then he's gone. He's like scared off. So, yeah, these guys are very frightened. For as threatening and as menacing as they appear to be, apparently they're very timid and they're very frightened off by us. So, I don't know. Weird.
Yeah, it's very it's very, very strange. Now, another story I want to talk about from the book, and I'll have the links up at I almost did it again. I'll have the links up at Banal of America. I'm going to be on Coast to Coast later tonight doing the news, so I must be already in coast mode. But the story here, let me get his name here. It was great because I read the book. I'm talking about the Gary Sudbrink case. And as I said, I'll have the link up on the Banal of America page for folks to check out. And folks can go to normalparanormal.org and go through. It's on page 2 right now as of July 17th, 2020, page 2 of the news stories that you have on the site, Creepy Calls from a Strange Entity. Because I was psyched because I read the book. And I was like, I want to hear this thing. I was going to actually ask you, but it slipped my mind in all the chaos of getting the show together and everything. I was like, I want to hear this. Mm-hmm. I want to hear this call. And so you have it on the site. Do you mind if we play? I'm not going to play it now, but if I throw in a little clip of it, just like so people can kind of get an idea of what it is. Is that right?
Yeah, you can play as much or as little as you want. You do it. Yep.
All right. Yeah, okay. Well, I'll play a little bit of it here.
I'll tell you who it is. Yeah. Do you want to speak to him?
Is Gary's son drink there?
Yeah, who's this? Steven, are you playing games with me or what? Huh? Steven, if you're playing games, I'm going to kick your ass.
So how long are you going to be back from Texas?
Huh?
You were being impersonated by the other voice.
Yeah, this is you, Steven, you idiot. You're pissing me off. Jerk. I'm going to get you on... Let's see what it says. Review. One new call out of area. Is Steven out of the area?
How long are you going to be back from Texas?
Wait, say that again?
You were being impersonated by the other voice.
Wait, hold on. Is Steven out of the calling area or what?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? He's in Queens.
Well, who are you talking to?
I don't know who the fuck.
Hello?
Hello?
Is Gary's son Brink there?
Who is this?
Hello?
How long are you going to be back from Texas?
What was that again, sir?
You were being impersonated by the other voice.
Oh, be quiet, Alf, huh? Sorry, would you see that again?
It's creepy as hell, as folks just heard. So I guess tell this story, because I was trying to wrap my mind around it, like, what the... This is one of those, and kudos to you, man, the book is, like, filled with these kind of stories that, like, just do not defy any genre, any, what is this? What happened to this guy? This does not even make any sense, but it's just so weird. So I guess tell the Gary story here, and explain what people just heard on that clip.
Yeah. So, in 1993, Gary Sudbrink was an Air Force captain assigned to medical work in San Antonio, Texas. And on February 7th of that year, he decides to make a surprise trip to visit friends and family in Long Island, New York. Now, Gary doesn't tell anybody not even his superiors. You know, he tells me he forgot to. He's waiting there to board the aircraft, the airplane to go to Long Island, and he talks with two different men at the airport, both of which wanted information from him. This is where the very beginning of the story gets a little strange. These men were very fascinated with him. They both wanted to know his name, and they were persistent about it. But what prompted that question, you know, he can't remember. He just remembers they were like, you know, what's your name? What do you do? Where do you live? Whatever. It's almost like data collection.
Right.
All right, whatever. He gets on the plane, doesn't think much of it. He gets to New York. At that time when he gets to New York and he surprises his dad and him meet with a guy named Coleman von Kavesky. Now, von Kavesky was the director of the Intercontinental UFO Research and Analytic Network. He was, from what I did some research, he was the unofficial spokesman for the UFO hearings held at the UN in 1978. He's a good friend of the Prime Minister of Grenada, Sir Eric Gary, who helped those hearings get started. Now, Gary's father was there. Yeah, Gary's father was there to discuss a UFO sighting. They have their report, whatever. They meet with them. They go back home. Now, it is about 10:30 p.m. at night. Gary calls his longtime friend, Mike, who had no prior knowledge of him being in town. So he calls up Mike. Mike is then like, yeah, you already called me, Gary, previous day. Gary's like, what are you talking about? I didn't call you. And Mike is like, yeah, you did. And you sounded like you had a stuffy nose and you were coming down with a cold. So, you know, that's why I didn't want to hang out with you. And Gary had to convince this guy that that wasn't him. Apparently the impersonator, Gary, had flown in through LaGuardia, but the real Gary came in through JFK. So that was an inconsistency there. As they're talking, call waiting comes through, and that's where the first strange phone call begins. And thank God, Gary, he's no stranger to this, to high strangeness. He presses record on the answering machine, and that's what you hear in the first call.
Yeah, it's very.
Are you going to play that or what?
Yeah, we can. I don't know when I thought I'd already stuck it in, but we can play it now. It doesn't matter. I'm going to have to go in and clean up the show a little bit from from some of the confusion earlier.
Okay.
But yeah. Go ahead. So it's what struck me hearing it. Was that the person almost sounded kind of drunk? That was kind of my takeaway.
Yeah.
But I couldn't. But even still, it was like, it doesn't make any sense who would, you know, there's no real rational explanation for who would be calling this guy drunk, repeating the same random stuff over and over again. Like you mentioned in the book, it sounds almost like a recording or in my mind, almost like a script or something. Like Gary kept trying to get him off script, but the guy just kept repeating the same, like, three or four phrases. It's very odd.
That's right. And talking with Gary about this, you know, at first we thought it was a recording, you know, I mean, for years he thought it was a recording, but yet when you actually analyze the audio, there are slight nuances in it that seem to be different. It doesn't seem to be like a recording at all. Now, that was the first call. So, the caller calls back two more times that night, so a total of three times that same night, and then he calls back another time the next day. And what's interesting is, excuse me, when I looked at the instances of the call of how many times this voice speaks, it seems to speak. There are less instances. Like the first call had, I think, 17. Instances. The second had 16. The third had 15. Then the fourth on the next night had 17 again. It also becomes less audible too, the more that the calls are I'm sorry, the more that the caller is on the phone.
Right.
Now I find this interesting because it's similar in nature to how people report MIB speech. You know, it's very dry, mechanical, robotic style. That's what I think has led Gary to believe that these could be calls from MIB. Again, only speculation, but the things that this caller was saying weren't even grammatically correct. like, you know, he would say, like, how long are you going to be back from Texas? But that doesn't make any sense because he's in New York. It just doesn't grammatically compute. But then the voice, you're being impersonated by the other voice. So that's striking because remember why Gary was on the phone to begin with. He was calling his friend. He said that he had already called prior. He was being impersonated. This wasn't the first instance that Gary was that his doppelganger was seen or experienced. You know, his brother, claims that a doppelganger Gary was driving alongside him one day, making faces through his car, trying to get the brother's attention. When the brother looks over, this weird Gary just drives off, and it was driving the same car that Gary drives. But the thing is, that incident took place in New York on a separate occasion, years prior to these calls. But at that moment in time, Gary, yeah, he was in New York at that time, but his car wasn't. It was back in Texas. So how did this impersonator have this exact same car? You know, again, what do you classify this under? Very strange stuff. It's a weird phone call. I guess that's all you can describe it as. But then the caller gets into other things that are just weird, like, keep your eyes to the skies, you know, near Orion. Well, they went out and they kept their eyes to the skies that night looking at Orion. They didn't see anything in the sky. Nothing, you know. So,
yeah. Yeah. Again, it's kind of like it goes back to the Shane story in a sense where it's like, why do these certain people like experience these very, very, very weird things that defy, as we said, defy categorization, defy even I can't even put my finger on what exactly was the what was behind these calls to this guy. Like and there's no, you know, I guess the only, if you're gonna be like a skeptic, the only thing would be like someone. He kept saying, like, he thought it was his brother messing with him and stuff. So it was like, maybe some kind of prank caller. But after all these years, somebody would, if it was someone playing a joke on somebody else, like, maybe it's just me. I think it's kind of like common practice. If you play a joke on somebody, you have to kind of, like, tell them you did it eventually so you can get the payoff of having bamboozled them, you know what I mean? So if it was someone joking around with him, they would have told him by now.
Well, absolutely, and that's why he thought it was his brother Steven, because Steven was the one who saw him, you know, in that doppelganger a few years prior, you know. That's why he thought, you know, the last thing he was going to jump to is, oh, this is paranormal in nature. He's like, all right, knock it off. This is ridiculous. And you can hear it. You can hear his frustration in the phone call. You can hear his family in it, too. They're trying to figure out what's going on. Very fascinating. And again, it's a great little snapshot of how people tend to respond to this stuff, right? Like, it's so bizarre that, like, you don't even want to deal with it. It's like, this is just silly. Like, enough, you know?
Yeah.
So,
Stuff, very weird. Yeah. All right. Now, before we head out for the night, Stuart, who was the guy, the quick-thinking individual in England who called in to the show to listen, managed to hear us. He wants to know if he can come on the air. I think he has a story or something. So, Stuart, we're going to bring you on the air.
Sure.
We only have a few minutes left, so we can't delve too deeply into something, but I want to reward you for your diligence in managing to find a way to listen to the live broadcast. So, what's going on, Stuart?
Hi. Yeah, I'm good. How are you? I fell asleep really early. I was exhausted and then woke up in the middle of the night. So I thought I'd listen live. So yeah.
Well, there you go.
I feel very privileged to have this exclusive. It's just the story. Well, you know, I had a strange thing happen to me. I had a shadow people experience when I was little, it made me like really terrified to be in the dark in my bedroom for several years. And it was like, it was really freaky. But it goes back to all these weird experiences that you've been talking about, all these mundane weird experiences, I think, and how some people aren't going to UFO conferences thing, but they are going to things about weird things. I think it's good to talk about these things because it was actually you, Tim, when you had Jason Offutt on, and he was doing a Shadow People book that when I heard that, I was like, oh, I'm not the only one. And actually, there was some kind of level of stress that just sort of disappeared after that day because I think being able to talk about it with someone who you know is not just going to dismiss you out of hand and, you know, be able to accept that what you've done, you know, what you've experienced might be real and that it's really strange. I think that's quite helpful for a lot of people. But I think that a lot of people might be walking around having experienced this stuff, like the man who, you know, had the guy who said he built the house come around. I mean, he probably, you know, that was a strange thing that happened. But, you know, he probably didn't, he obviously reported that, but stuff like that might be going all the time and people might be getting really freaked out thinking they're the only ones. So I think it's good to talk about these things, have a place to talk about them. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that's what Justin does. He takes these stories from folks and tries to unravel them if he can. So, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of that observation, Justin?
Yeah, well, you know, Stuart, you know, it's, I think the best thing we can do is just to, you know, as investigators and researchers, is to just shut up and listen to people, you know, just to hear the stories, to set aside the judgment, you know, okay, let me try to figure this out. Let me try to rationalize this. Like, we just need to be quiet and just listen to the people, tell their stories and, you know, share their experiences and feel comfortable doing that. And I'm glad that, you know, that you can share your experiences, that you know that you're not the only one out there who's dealing with this. Even if you may not be able to classify it, you know, maybe it goes beyond shadow people, you know, maybe it's something much more. You know, you need to, I'm glad when I hear from people who are more comfortable now because other people are talking about this. So thank you.
Oh, no, it's great. Well, yeah, can I just add one more thing? I'd just like to add that, you know, when I heard about it, I sort of realized that it was less important knowing what it was and explaining it and more important to just know that I wasn't the only one. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, to me, it's not going to matter. I've accepted that I'm never going to be able to understand what happened, but just that I wasn't the only one who it happened to. I mean, yeah. So thanks for that. Thanks for getting all these stories out and, you know,
yeah,
there might be people out there experiencing them. Sorry, what's that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, with these experiences, you know, we may not be able to explain them away because maybe they're not meant to be explained away. Maybe they're just meant to be experienced.
Yes.
There you go.
Exactly. Brilliant.
All right, Stuart, I'm going to put you back on hold so you can hear the end of the show. So thank you. And I love you, Stuart, but I hope you're not the only one who heard tonight's episode. So hopefully this is recorded well. But I'll put you on hold so you can hear us wrap it up. All right, buddy?
But thanks very much. Have a great one.
Thanks for calling in, man. Thanks for finding a way. I appreciate it. All right, there we go. So the book came out a couple years ago. It's called The Spectrum, Glimpses of the Paranormal and Encounters with the Strange. I assume folks can get that at Amazon and all the normal places you can pick up books, right, and through the website?
Yeah, Amazon's the place to get it, and if you can't find it in your local bookstore, then request it.
Exactly, yeah. A lot of folks, they probably don't even realize that. You can go down to Barnes & Noble and be like, hey, I want The Spectrum by Justin Bamforth. They can look it up, and they can order it, and it'll come to the bookstore. You can come get it. So, you know, if you're not someone who wants to do Amazon, or you want to even look, even Barnes & Noble needs our help nowadays. So if you want to support your local Barnes & Noble or your brick-and-mortar bookstore, they can get them for you anyway. And the website, of course, is normalparanormal.org. Oh, that's my Alexa going off now. I'm telling you, man, maybe you're like some kind of, like, technical... you got some kind of technical curse or something going on. So that actually
maybe
happens. I don't know if you have one of those. The certain combination of words will set her off sometimes if you say the wrong. If it sounds like, I don't want to say her name now. She's going to start up again. But if it sounds like her name, she'll all of a sudden start. It's very freaky and annoying. It's like, it's not what I'm doing. It has nothing to do with you. So what do you have going on now? I assume you're holding up all right through the pandemic. Has this impacted your work at all, or have you seen any, and especially, I guess, in your case too, I mean, it's in knowing, because you talk to a lot of people who experience strange things, and if she counts us down, just we can go like a couple minutes past it, so don't worry about it. Two things, as I was saying, like, has the pandemic affected your work at all, and also have you seen any sort of or heard anything from people experiencing strange stuff through this? Because this is a very disorienting time for all of us, so I would imagine that for certain people who might be prone to strangeness, this might be rife for weirdness to happen.
Yeah, no, excellent question. I haven't seen any correlation between the pandemic and strange events. If anything, people are home more, so I'm able to, reach them more easily. I've been doing a lot more interviews with people, phone calls, especially emails. So that's been great. That's been kind of like a blessing. It's certainly strange times we live in, but the strange events, on a supernatural level, those will still go on until the end of time, So I just encourage people to keep their eyes peeled, to be more observant, to look beyond what we think it is that it appears to be, or to look beyond what it appears to be and what it is that we think we know, and to kind of question everything, do your own research. I've given a lot of people a lot of things to go look at, and don't just read my book, read other people's books, but educate yourself with the whole gamut of high strangeness events, everything, because you'll begin to see a pattern, as I've noticed, and you'll begin to see that all of these things could be related and connected in one way or the other. And the people are at the heart of all of this. So that leads me to believe that maybe the phenomenon needs us more than we think. So.
Yeah, I think so for sure too. That's a great observation. Yeah, the people are at the. It takes two to tango. You need the witnesses, or else there is no phenomenon, right? kind of like if a tree falls in a forest, kind of thing. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, man. I really do appreciate it. I want to apologize in a sense. I felt like I was a little distracted at the beginning there because of these technical problems, and. I'll shoot you a message as soon as I know, which should be hopefully like in 5 or 10 minutes that this recorded. I'm going to assume it did if they're counting us down and says we're broadcasting. Stuart called in. I mean, I'd be very surprised if somehow there was no record of what just went down for the last 2 hours, aside from Stuart's memory and our memories of what just happened. So in the event that, in the freak event that happens, we'll figure it out. We'll get you back on the show. We'll do it all over again. Don't worry if you don't mind. But I'm hoping, I'm confident, I'm cautiously optimistic, might be the best way to put it, that we're all set. So I think we're going to be okay. And folks can check out the book, The Spectrum, Glimpses of the Paranormal and Encounters with the Strange. And, of course, they want to check out the website, normalparanormal.org. And they can find you on Twitter also at normparanormal. And I got that linked up through my Twitter account as well. And I can't thank you enough, Justin. I really appreciate it. I had a great time talking to you. This is a lot of interesting stuff that we've never really gotten into on But All of America too deeply. So I enjoyed the stories. I think these are great. Folks will probably enjoy listening to these around the campfire later on next week or next weekend or something like that, or later this weekend if we can get the show out in time. So good campfire stories, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, happy to be part of it, Tim, and I'll be in touch soon. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Have a great evening and a great weekend and a great summer. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you got it. See ya.
Good night. There you go, folks. That was Justin Bamford, author of The Spectrum, Glimpses of the Paranormal and Encounters with the Strange. Yeah, as I said, I hope that all this went down without a hitch. Very disorienting to start the program and have the folks in the chat room saying they can't hear anything. So, and I tried it a few times on my end and definitely was not loading the live program. So, knock on wood. I'm like nervous right now because I know I'm going to check, and I just hope that everything went off without a hitch, because I'd feel like a real ass having to ask Justin to come back and redo this whole thing again. You know, that he gave us a couple hours of his time, so it's on a Friday night, which is, you know, a busy time for some folks. So, you know, so hopefully, fingers crossed, you're listening to this later on this weekend and everything went down without a hitch. And hopefully next week we don't have any similar issues, because, of course, we'll be back next week with another edition of Banal of America, another session in the Summer of Strangeness. Our guest will be Kiki Dombrowski. She is a tarot reader down in Nashville. You can find out more on her at kikidombrowski.com, KikiDombrowski. She has spent a long time exploring mythology, sacred destinations, high strangeness, supernatural events, witchcraft, divination. She's got a master's in medieval English. So we're going to get into that kind of stuff, divination. And she did, I don't even know what you'd call it. I'll have to get her to talk more about it. But she did some kind of like divination thing for me on Twitter a few weeks ago. And it was just, I just got like, you know, the Twitter version, which is like two tweets. And it was like, this is really interesting. I want to find out more about how she does this and how she gets this information and how the process works. So we're going to get into all that. And we're going to get into her work as a tarot reader down there in Nashville, because that's really fascinating. I don't think we've ever had anybody on the show who does this. This is their job. So it'll be really fun to find out more about that. So that's going to be Kiki Dombrowski next Friday night, July 24th at 9 p.m. live. And God willing, we'll be broadcasting live, and there won't be any more technical issues. So with that said, until then, this is Tim Banal thanking you for listening. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room who valiantly tried to get to the bottom of what was going on, and big thanks to Stuart, who managed to come up with a way to listen live. And as I said, I love you, Stuart, but I hope you weren't the only one listening to that show. And yeah, on that note, until next week, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.